You know, one of the things that makes what Alan Fadling is sharing with us so significant, too, is that he knows what it is to be a leader, and he knows what it is to say, hey, you know what? I need to slow down a bit, because it's so easy that we can get hurried. In fact, Alan, I'm thinking that we can get hurried and not even realize it.
Yeah, that's sometimes the trickiest kind of hurry we have. It's just that innate autopilot, got to hurry to the next thing. You know, I'm thinking, this is an experience maybe a lot of us have had. You know, you're in a conversation, and the person with whom you're talking starts looking kind of 5 degrees past you. They're not looking you in the face anymore. You kind of already feel like they're on to the next thing, but they've got to keep talking because you're still there. And, you know, that never feels very good. And that's one of the prices of that kind of internal hurry. I'm even more embarrassed to say that I've sometimes been the person who's kind of already left the conversation, even though my body's still there. And those are the kinds of things that I think cost us more than we realize when we let our hurried souls sort of dictate the pace of our relationships. I think that happens in our human interactions. I think it especially happens in our interactions with God.
Now, that is exactly where I wanted you to take us, because as you say, and I think a lot of us, if we just take the time to think about it, and not a whole lot of time either, just a few minutes to think about it and be honest, we can say, hey, you know what? I really do know what it is to, number one, be on the receiving end of someone being there with me and not being there. But I also know what it is to be on the transmitting end of being there and not being there.
Yeah.
But like you say, though, not just in our relationship with other humans, but even in our relationship with God. And one of the things that you really, really talk about as you focus on that in the chapter Leading in His Presence is that how it took you a while. It took a while before God brought some men into your life who were practicing a way of leadership that was deep-rooted and fruitful and helping others deepen their roots, and that they showed you how to actually walk with God as a pastor.
Yeah. One of the ways I've put it is I felt like they reintroduced me to Jesus. You know, I sort of followed Jesus into ministry. He had made such a significant difference in my life as a high school student, a new follower, and so I quickly came to the decision that I wanted to, whatever it meant, I wanted my life to make a difference for God's kingdom, and that fairly quickly resulted in being a part of a youth group in a local church, and then on leadership, and then on staff, and then eventually leading a college ministry in Southern California. And my busyness for Jesus crowded out my friendship with Jesus. I think that happens to a lot of us. I don't think you have to have a paid ministry job for that to happen to you. I think you can be a faithful volunteer in the context of a church or a ministry. You so passionately want to honor God and serve God and do good things for God. And there's an odd way in which that can get in the way. But what I think God most wants from us, even before our service, which is our friendship. You know, He didn't make us in the beginning, when you read the story in Genesis, to be servants first. I mean, there was work to be done, but it was work in the context of friendship. He first made us because He wanted to walk in the cool of the evening and share the love of Father, Son, and Spirit with a bigger circle. That's why the greatest commandment isn't get more stuff done. The greatest commandment is be loved and love God with all your heart, soul, mind, strength. And the other side of that coin is, and love your neighbor with that same kind of love. In our hurry, that reality fades, I think.
Mm. And so I know you mentioned several different tasks that you were working on when you became so hurried that the quality of your walk with God was not what you would have liked. What are some of the specific, if you could nail down for us, even if you do it in list form, some of the ways, some of the reasons, the causes of our hurried life.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there's more than I could probably list, but I can easily give you a few that have been, you know, sort of my nemesis. One of them has been just my lifelong wrestling with the dynamic of anxiety. I think there are a lot of us who are worriers of different flavors, you know. We have a lot of reasons that we become anxious. But anxiety sort of turns my heart into a hamster wheel. And I get into this driven mode of trying to fix things so I can feel a little more relaxed and some version of what I guess I imagine would be peace. And I remember one mentor saying, you know, maybe Jesus is right about worry. Maybe it actually doesn't add a single thing to us, doesn't make our lives any longer, doesn't make us any taller, doesn't improve anything we do. In fact, it has a way of diminishing us. And so the way that this one mentor put it was, you know, maybe anything you could do in anxiety, you could do way better from a place of peace. Mm. And that's been a long journey of wrestling with that, because I have to admit, there are times where I almost imagined my anxiety was an asset. Like, it got me moving, and it meant I cared, and all of that. But again, you know, I just have wrestled down to some deep places. Maybe Jesus is right about worry. And that has been one of the real accelerators of my life. So anxiety. A second one has been for me a deep hunger to be recognized by others. The scriptures sometimes use the idea or the phrase of people-pleasing. That sounds really negative. You know, just wanting people to recognize me, that sounds very positive. But there's this feeling like I am what people say about me that begins to get me, you know, trying to achieve and trying to impress and trying to please others. And, of course, the question is, how much pleasure from others do I need to feel like my life makes a difference? And the answer to that question is probably the same answer as if you ask someone with some amount of wealth, how much money do you need to feel like you've got enough? And the answer is, well, a little bit more than I've got now. At least it's a common one, right?
Mm, that's right.
So anxiety is one of the things that's accelerated me, my longing and hunger for other people to recognize me. And again, on the anxiety thing, maybe there's peace for me before I go out and do a thing. Maybe I actually follow an absolute prince of peace, and I could find peace in friendship with him. And then as far as this recognition thing, maybe instead of feeling like I need everybody out there to like what I do and to be impressed by me and say, wow, good job, Alan, maybe it's even better for me and maybe it's more substantial for me to hear a voice speaking to me just like he did to his son. You are my beloved son. I'm so pleased with you. And to realize that in the case of Jesus, the first time he hears those words are at the very beginning of his ministry when he's just come up out of the waters of baptism, and he has no ministry resume to speak of at all. He has nothing to show for himself in terms of ministry achievements, and he's given the gift of you are my beloved son. What if we trusted and knew that God was saying that to us before we enter into the work of ministry? What if we ministered out of a sense of meaning and value and being treasured rather than working for those sorts of things? So at least those are a couple of them. I guess maybe a third that I'll briefly mention is, and we sort of hinted at this in our earlier segment, but it's the whole matter of I am what I have. It's the whole matter of possessions. I'll be happier if I have a newer iPhone, or I'll be happier if I have a newer car, or you can downsize that all kinds of ways. Some little thing is going to make me happy, as though my soul can be filled with some material possession. My soul is way bigger than that. And the only thing that's going to satisfy my soul is going to be something that I experience in friendship with God. So maybe you can see in that some of the unhurried and hurried rhythms of my wrestlings over the years.
I can imagine, because when we look at, and I mean literally look at, what people will do to get the recognition that they want. Some people will work 70 hours instead of working 45 hours a week. Some people mm-hmm. will, you know, skip their lunch breaks instead of taking their lunch breaks. They want to overachieve so they can get that recognition. Some of the things that people will do to, again, amass the possessions. They'll work longer than they need to. All kinds of things. Certainly other things that could be considered worse than that. Selling the bodies, you name it, to get possessions. Yeah. Going after all of those things that, like you said, don't satisfy the way we really need to be satisfied. And most people, if they realize it, even desire to be satisfied. When we come back, could you talk us some more through the whole issue of going to get this, going to get that, just being driven?
Yeah, you bet.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to share with you, too, that Alan Fadling speaks and consults internationally with organizations like Saddleback Church, InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, Halftime Institute, and more. He's sharing a wealth of information with us about how we can slow down and actually become more productive in life. We're speaking from his book, An Unhurried Leader. Leaders, are you writing down these tips?